This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. Coming up, pathologists and historians investigate the early death of Vladimir Lenin using modern techniques. And the familiar tropes and lofty platitudes of graduation speeches are pushed aside for life lessons that are neither rosy nor sugar-coated. But we begin with an investigation into a growing financial bubble, this time in the gas industry. Last week's admission by J.P. Morgan Chase's chair and CEO that the firm had lost $2 billion on one bad trade has renewed popular mistrust of big finance and revived calls for stricter regulation of Wall Street. Stories of corporate gambles on the questionable securities, products, and trades blamed for collapsing the mortgage and housing market are well known. A special report released by Reuters uncovers complex and risky engineering by another industry, big energy, specifically the giant Chesapeake Energy Corporation. On the line with more is Carrick Mollenkamp, reporter with Reuters Enterprise Team. Carrick, great to have you with us.
Thanks so much.
A primer, please, on Chesapeake. How big is it? How did it make its name? And where is it now?
Yeah, so Chesapeake played a role in pioneering the exploration and finding of natural gas across the U.S. And they've been the CEO, Aubrey McClendon, has been a strong proponent that natural gas is needed to supplant oil at some point as a fuel. So what they've done since 1989 is bought up via using leases on land, 15 million acres across the U.S. They take that land, they drill down about 5,000 feet. They then use a process called fracking, which has kind of become a well-known name, which is a horizontal then drilling, using high-pressure water to release the gas, and then they bring it up and sell it. The problem is that they've been such a strong proponent of that, and they've leased so much land that's played a role likely in driving down the value of natural gas, which is unfortunate for them because that brings in the money into the company.
And it has gone on what you report on as one of the biggest property buying sprees ever by a public company in the U.S., combining the area nearly the size of West Virginia. So funding this massive and fast expansion, it's used some financial tools called volumetric production payments. Can you give us a little bit of English on that one?
Sure. And what's just to go back to the land issue, what's been interesting is when they do lease the land, you know, it's made millionaires of people that own rural land that never thought they would be paid millions of dollars so that someone could set up a drill in their backyard.
Mm-hmm.
So some have benefited. All right, so I mean, at the top line, the basic problem with Chesapeake is this. They've got not enough money coming in, and they've got too much money going out to pay for the land leasing and the drilling and exploration. So typically, if that were you or me, we would be in a real bind. We might have to lose our home. We'd lose our credit cards. We would be in a real jam. With companies, it's a different story because they've got Wall Street to depend on, who want the clients, who want the fees. What they've done, what the banks have done in 10 deals, is basically give money up front to Chesapeake, which badly needs that cash now,
uh-huh.
yesterday,
yeah.
and tomorrow. And in return, they've given up the future money that's going to come when the gas comes up out of the ground. And so it's called a volumetric production payment, but really it's nothing more than getting cash now for something later.
Okay, that's something that's done fairly frequently by businesses, you know, that they're betting against expected business. But the point that you're making here is that this goes beyond it because they're kind of creating these financial products in order to fund the gap?
Yeah, and I'm not so sure that companies really typically mortgage their assets because they're in a cash bind. I mean, it's just not a good thing. I mean, what Chesapeake is doing is giving up future money and paying a high cost just to get money now. It's not that far away from having to go borrow money against your paycheck or your tax return. And it started with the banks, and it's gotten more complex because they've had to kind of push out to a wider investor base. And so they start with banks, And we're now at you know, tapping junk bond investors to make these deals work.
And complicated also by these finances being intertwined with CEO Aubrey McClendon's personal finances. What's the evidence of that?
Okay, so we've been running this kind of series that we're doing on a parallel track, and we've got kind of the Aubrey McClendon track, and then we've got the corporate story. And the two have kind of merged because initially what we were looking at is a hedge fund that Mr. McClendon was running, and also the fact that he was mortgaging stakes in Wells to go and borrow money up to $1.1 billion with banks and private equity funds and hedge funds that also were lending money to the company. So it all kind of marries and gets intertwined together.
The picture you're painting here sounds a lot like the fraud perpetuated by Ken Lay and Enron. Is that a fair comparison?
Yeah, we've thought about that. I mean, the disclosure to a point has been better by Chesapeake than Enron. I mean, the Nigerian barge deal that Enron did comes to mind. The off-vehicle partnerships that they were doing were not disclosed. Chesapeake's disclosed them, but they don't detail them that much, but you kind of know they're out there. Enron was a little bit more complicated in the way these things were structured. At the end of the day, all the structures are a form of financing that have less to do with the actual purpose of the business.
Well, we did see yesterday the credit rating for a deal that they had planned, Chesapeake had planned on leveraging, deteriorated. Shares also fell yesterday.
Yeah.
Hearing a lot about the these complex financial deals and whether or not the Volcker Rule, the proposed regulation by the federal government following the financial meltdown of 2009, would these regulations help prevent this kind of a bubble?
Well, I think in the case of Chesapeake, well, let's put Chesapeake aside and talk about J.P. Morgan. Can we segue to J.P. Morgan for a second?
Only if you can wrap it up quickly.
Okay, I think in the case of the Volcker Rule, it's difficult. Obviously, the purpose is to limit the kind of house bets, the bets that the banks are making using their own money to drive profits, and that was a big thing in the subprime crisis, and we get that. The problem gets to be, and what the banks will say is, we are a lender globally, and we can't take on that loan risk if we can't hedge that risk, if we can't kind of cover our lending. And so we've got to undertake these trades to protect us against losses. And that's where the Volcker Rule gets gray, because it doesn't delineate between making in-house bets and protecting yourself on loans.
Garrick Mullenkamp, a big report in Reuters. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Garrick Mullenkamp is a reporter with Reuters. He investigated the financial deals fueling the huge growth of the Chesapeake Energy Corporation. He's also following the J.P. Morgan Chase story. You can find a lot more on that, his articles, and to a video timeline of the story at wordofmouthradio.org.